And now, the tradition continues as WABC presents John Gambling with the mayor of the greatest city in the world, Mike Bloomberg.
And here we go on the Friday edition of the John Gambling Show. Yes, indeed, with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, because of scheduling, on the phone this morning. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, John. Nice, warm day.
Warm, incredibly warm, and it actually works to a lot of people's benefit and some detriment. Of course, those that like the cold weather, the coat sellers, the ski resort operators, the ice skating rink operators, they don't like this too much. But for home heating oil buyers like me and most of the people, this is good news.
John, if you take a look outside, you will see the spectacular job that our sanitation department continues to do. Not one bit of snow on the streets. They've kept them perfectly clear.
It might also work to our favor from our sports teams. We've got the Giants and the Jets in the playoffs by the skin of their teeth, but they'll be in Foxborough and Philadelphia, where it'll be warm as well.
Let us hope that we have, I can't say it'll be a Subway series, I can't even say it'll be a New York series, but our hearts are with the Jets and the Giants, even if they do play across the river. And it would be wonderful if you had a Super Bowl with the two of them.
Speaking of warmth, Mr. Mayor, we have, and I talked with Wesley Autry, as you did yesterday, down at City Hall, honoring this man that jumped in front of a train to save somebody else. We have the story this morning of Julio Gonzalez and Pedro Navarez, who caught little three-year-old Timothy Otto. And we also have three transit officers, Sergeant Bruno Valente and Officers Brian Higgins and Leslie Grant, who delivered a baby. This is the kind of stuff that puts a smile on New York City.
Well, it does, and it's I'm sure somebody will find fault someplace, but this gives you really a lot of confidence in your fellow man and woman. Most people are nice people. Most people try to help. Some of us have a little more courage than others. I don't know what we'd all do if we were faced with Wesley's situation of the train coming, and do you jump out of the way or do you jump on this guy and hold him down and let it go over you? But I think we use the word hero a lot too frequently, and in this case, certainly in Wesley's case, he's no question, he was a hero.
Oh, and the two men that caught that little boy as well. I mean, that was quite some feat in and of itself. And again, I think it just underscores that most New Yorkers are just the best of the best.
If they weren't, the city wouldn't be doing as well as it's doing. Crime down and schools better and jobs coming here and clean streets. All of those things are because people in the city want to make it work. And, you know, we've been through periods in our city's history where they didn't want to make it work. You go back to the 70s and you saw the disaster. And what's different? I would argue that it's the people that finally said enough is enough. We're going to make this work. And day in and day out, the average person in the street does it.
You know, sadly, speaking of people that make this city work, I assume that you saw in the newspapers today that really one of the most famous names of New York and Broadway, Vincent Sardi of Sardi's Restaurant, passed away at 91. I knew Vincent fairly well, and he was a character, but boy, he loved New York City.
Everybody said that. I didn't really know him. I think I met him once, but he built an institution, and then today we have different institutions, Sardi's and the Stork Club and the Copacabana, all of those kinds of things are gone. But there are new icons, and our kids will say, yeah, I remember back when. And it'll be a different group of things they remember.
All right. You and I have talked many times that you have been working hard to get the Democrats to come to New York City for their convention in 2008. I understand that's iffy at the moment.
Well, the way conventions work is that they ask the cities to basically pay for the convention. And in the olden days, when a convention brought an awful lot of economic activity, or even today, when it brings a lot of economic activity to places that need it, that may be a good investment for those cities. And the cities typically, after they commit and they sign a contract to make sure they pay everything, after that they go out and they try to raise it privately. If you remember 4 years ago, we tried very hard to get both the Democratic and Republican conventions to come to New York, and it was a period in our history when nobody was sure that conventions would come here because it was right after 9/11, and not everybody thought we even had a future. We tried very hard to get both of them. The Democrats chose to go elsewhere, and the Republicans did choose to come to New York. The city signed a contract with Republicans to pay for the convention. I think it was about $85 million. I went out and we raised, a lot of people helped, and we raised all of the money privately. So in the end, it cost the city nothing, and the money was spent here. And it filled hotel rooms that might have otherwise gone empty and restaurants that might otherwise not have been as well patronized. Today, it's 4 years later, and the situation's somewhat different. Today, the hotels are full, the restaurants are doing well, and the conventions don't bring the kind of economic activity they used to bring. And the city just can't afford to go on the hook. And I think a lot of cities are saying the same thing. There were very few that were interested in having the conventions at all. I thought we would, it would be great if we could get both of them again. But what we can't do this time is pay for, is go on the line to pay for it, because I don't think we'd be it'd be easy to raise the money.
How important? Excuse me, Mr. Mayor. How important is the fact that we have no idea who either of the players will be here for the Democrats or the Republicans, and those that are investing their money aren't quite sure they're backing the horse that's going to
win. Well, a lot of people that want to put money into politics want to give it to candidates and not to New York City to pay for a convention here. When the Republicans were had come to town 4 years ago, we had a sitting president, and so there wasn't really so much of an issue of giving it to multiple candidates. This time, we're lucky enough to have a lot of people who are trying to run in both parties, but that takes the money away from the conventions. And remember, conventions today, really nothing's decided at conventions. We have a much more democratic process than the old smoke-filled back rooms. Today, the delegates are picked, and then really the candidates are picked in the primaries going around the country. So by the time you get to the convention, it's a big show. It's fun, and we'd love to have the Democrats come. But today our hotel rooms are much more full and restaurants are doing better, and it just the city can't go on the line. And I've talked to a lot of the Democratic politicians and fundraisers to see if they can help, and I walked away with a feeling that most of them wanted to spend their money on helping particular candidates, the candidate of their choice, rather than raising money for
the
city.
Have you ceded this to Denver?
No, I mean, it's up to the Howard Dean and the Democratic Party. I'd love to see them come here, but they're going to have to find some ways to raise the money themselves. We also, at the same time, remember, we're trying to raise $350 million for the World Trade Center Memorial, and I've also made a commitment to raise $50 million for a new poverty program that I think should be funded at the beginning with private money. So, you know, all of those things added together, I think the bottom line is we'd love to have them, but I can't commit the city to pay for a convention. We're on the other side of that in this day and age. We want conventions to come here and bring money.
Not to have it go the other way.
Yeah.
All right, Mr. Mayor, hang on. Let me take a break. We'll come right back. Mayor Michael Bloomberg this morning here at 77 WABC. Coming back. We continue with Mayor Michael Bloomberg here on the John Gambling Show at 77 WABC Friday get together. Mr. Mayor, NYPD, Ray Kelly is announcing today that you're going to hire a think tank to look at it as an independent review of the department's use of weapons and training of weapons.
Well, you know, we're never sure that the one thing we are sure of is that we don't know everything, and other people can have some good ideas. I also think it's always good to review and take a look at what your practices are, whether it's in training or regulations. Look at your performance and see how well things are going. And I've never been afraid to ask outsiders to come in and tell us what they think we're doing right and what they think we're doing wrong. We can always improve, and we always want to be open and try to improve.
The shooting over in Brooklyn, rather in Queens, will that be part of this investigation and report?
Well, it's one of the data points in a lot of things, but what they really want to do is look at all of our procedures and all of our trainings. Remember, we have 38,000-odd police officers out there every day, and there are incidents all the time where we interface with the public, and I want to make sure that every one of those things are looked at. So clearly the tragedy, Sean Bell, somebody getting killed, is one of the things that that will go into it. But that investigation is being done by the Queens District Attorney, Dick Brown. This has nothing to do with that particular incident per se. It's just another one of a large collection of events that take place where our police department, virtually almost always does this. There's a reason why this police department is called the finest. It does a spectacular job, but we can always do better, and that's what we're trying to find out. Are there ways that we could do even better?
Was your police commissioner encouraging this, or did he find it a burden?
Quite the contrary. Ray Kelly has, one of the things I've always liked about Ray is that he's always willing to listen. He's a tough guy, and he makes decisions, and once he makes a decision, he's got the courage to stand up and implement it, even when sometimes there are critics. But he's always willing to listen to new ideas and to other people. And that's the reason why he's our police commissioner, and I think the best police commissioner this city has ever had.
We have in the school system here a special schools investigator, Richard Condon is his name, and there's a report this morning that this past year, 2006, there were 259 allegations of sexual misconduct, 101 of which were turned over to federal or state prosecutors, up 68% from the year prior to that. Your reaction to this?
Well, we have 80,000-odd teachers, and I'd love to tell you that whenever you put 80,000 people together, they're all perfect, but we all know that's not true. It is sad. Every one of those cases shouldn't have happened if the allegations are true, and I think Condon does a spectacular job, and I can't encourage him enough to make sure that any time there's an allegation, we investigate it fully, and if there's no substance to it, great. That's the best outcome. But if there is reason to believe that something inappropriate or illegal was done, then to refer it to the appropriate authorities. And I'm not sure whether the incidents of harassment or whatever are greater or just Condon is finding more, doing a better job in finding those that exist. So I don't know the difference, but we're going to go out there and make sure that every child is safe and every employee of the city has the right to work and not be harassed.
There was a report released this week sort of looking at cities' readiness when it comes to disaster relief. 1 in 4 was the scale, I think. New York got a 3. How did you react to that?
Well, it's funny. This was a self-assessment kind of test. They asked us, did we think that we were totally ready? And I don't think that we ever will be totally ready, nor do I think we should ever think that we have a perfect system. We have dramatically improved the ability to communicate. But we welcome the opportunity to continue to improve. New equipment, new methods of training, new frequencies to work, new procedures. And so when we said that when we were asked, how ready are you, we said, well, we're 3/4 of the way there, which is a lot better than we were before. But anybody that says they're 100% where they want to be has got to be a very small town where they can probably look across the street and communicate by just yelling at each other. In the real world, a city of our size, complexity, the way radio signals behave, we're always going to have more to do, and I don't want us to be rated 100%. Public has a right to know that we are, our job is to keep going and improving and looking for new ways to do it. Today we do have radios that perform very differently than they did back in 9/11. Today we know where all of our ambulances and all of our fire engines are through these automatic vehicle locators, which helps us to deploy equipment. That gets it there faster. The radios work better in buildings. But in the end, remember, command structures are from the chiefs all the way down to the firefighter, or always all the way down to the police officer. And the real key is to make sure that we have planned in advance, which is Joe Bruno, Office of Emergency Management job, to make sure that we know how to communicate at the top levels and deploy our resources and know, and everybody's got to know what their job is going to be in every situation, and then make sure that the chiefs of all of the emergency services, or heads in the case of other agencies, get together and talk and show up together, and they're doing exactly that.
There was a very disturbing report, don't know if you saw it or not, in yesterday's Newsday about Nassau County, part of the statewide $46 million system, which would integrate all, including New York City, into one system that would communicate between itself and those departments that need to talk with one another in a disaster, and that it was being denied access to the water towers, the height with the radio microwaves, because water districts were looking to be paid by the state. It was very disturbing because all of this works together.
Yeah, Newsday had another big story about it today, actually, as well. You know, we just got to get all on the same page here. I actually think there are a lot of towns that don't like cell phone towers. But the truth of the matter is, in this day and age, more people make calls on cell phones than make calls on landlines in the United States, and that's going to be that's a trend that is going to continue. If people want to be safe in their towns, they're just going to have to learn to find places to put cell towers so we have seamless coverage. We just live in a world where people want to be in contact.
Mayor Michael Bloomberg here at 77 WABC. Mr. Mayor, the half hour, we've reached it. Let me take a break. We'll get right back to Mayor Michael Bloomberg at 77 WABC. John Gambling here at 77 WABC, Friday edition with Mayor Michael Bloomberg. Scheduling requiring him to be on the phone with us today. Also, speaking of phones, you'll have your opportunity to talk with the mayor, ask the questions, 1-800-848-WABC. If you'd like to get in the queue, 1-800-848-WABC. Mr. Mayor, you were traveling Washington for Gerald Ford's funeral. I saw you there. Also to Albany for the State of the State. Your reaction to the governor's proposals?
Well, I went up on Sunday for his inauguration, which was a very nice event and a lot warmer outside than mine was a year ago, which we all appreciated. And then I went up to, as you're right, to see, listen to a State of the State. I thought it was a great speech, and I think that Governor Spitzer does more than just give speeches. I think he'll get some things done. That the important thing is not what he says, it's what he does. Anybody can promise, but I think Elliot Spitzer's got a good plan on how to accomplish some things, and if he were to get half of the things that he is going to try to do done, it would be great. If he could get them all, it would be fantastic. I love what he wants to do in terms of reforming some of the practices in politics. I've always thought that we have much too much partisanship at every level of government, and that there's much too much what's called pay to play. People give money because they try to buy influence, and sadly it works, and that's not democracy. Shouldn't work that way. And Governor Spitzer has said he's going to take that campaign finance and ethics straight on. That's great. We need that. He's very much in favor of charter schools and universal pre-K. We've said that that's those are two of our highest priorities and have been, so we certainly are in sync there. He's offered to give us help down at the World Trade Center. We can always use more help. Things are finally going pretty well.
He's claimed that there's been gridlock down there. Did that make you a little annoyed?
Well, I think in all fairness, it's a very complex thing. I've said this a thousand times. You've got a private developer. You've got a number of different levels of government and agencies involved. The most important thing is that we do it right. Have we had false starts? In retrospect, if we knew what the right end game was and went straight there, it would have been a lot easier, but that's always the case. I think we finally have figured out a ways to have a Freedom Tower that will be full and profitable, and that Silverstein can build buildings without getting himself overextended. We are in the process of raising the money, as we talked about before, to pay for the memorial. That's going very well. Everybody seems to be on board, or pretty much everybody. It's New York, so not 100%.
How close are you to the $500 million?
We have to raise... We originally committed $300. I think $350 has to be the amount of money that we raise, because we want to leave an endowment so that the memorial can afford to function in a manner that is appropriate. I don't want them skimping so much because they don't have the money. So there'll be revenues from ticket sales, but they'll have revenues from an endowment, which we'd like to leave. And I think the answer to your question is we have to raise a total of $350 million privately. The last time we had a meeting, a board meeting, we announced we'd passed the $200 million mark, and we continue to work. And anybody that would like to contribute, there's a campaign. You can just call 311, and they'll tell you how to do it. But we've had an awful lot of very generous individuals and corporations, not just in New York, but around the country and around the world. And I spend part of a number of days on the phone asking for money.
And I suspect you get most of what you ask for. I get the sense that the governor thinks that the Freedom Tower is, as designed, too large.
I don't know that he thinks that. I think he said that, or one of his guys said, they'd take a look at it. Remember, it's starting to go up already. It's been redesigned once for security reasons. And I think David Childs has come up with a great design. We wanted to build an iconic building. Everybody in the country was in favor of that. This will be. We want to make sure it's a building that we can fill, and we've got commitments from the state and federal government, and there's some negotiations going on in the private sector to take a lot of the space in the Freedom Tower. I'm more optimistic today, I think, than I was before, that they'll be able to fill it. If you remember, when the World Trade Center, the Twin Towers, were originally built, it took something like 13 years to fill them, and it took 20 years to fill them with non-governmental leases. It also, for a number of years, really held back development in all of the surrounding neighborhoods, and we're trying not to make that mistake. So these buildings will come on one after another rather than all at once. That's good for the real estate market. I think they're all of appropriate size. In this day and age, people seem not to want to have buildings so tall where you got to change elevators once or twice going all the way up. These are much more modest in scale. It's all part of the Lieberskin design. Lieberskin's design was picked by a public process, as was the World Trade Center Memorial was picked by a public process. And I think those will chug along, and any help that Governor Spitzer and his team can give us will be greatly appreciated.
Have you had conversations with the governor about your desire for the state to kick in their share of the money when it comes to construction and also education that was court-ordered?
We have, in the last 5 years, increased the New York City taxpayers' contribution to our public school system by $3.5 billion annually. The state during that period has increased its contribution by $1.5 billion. If you think about how big $3.5 billion is, it's bigger than the budgets of most states and certainly almost all cities and many countries. $3.5 billion is an enormous amount of money, and we've committed to putting in a lot more money over the next 3 years. I've said from day one, education is our number one priority. Teachers have been given a 43% raise over the last 5 years. They're working a little harder for it. They've changed some work rules, but the bottom line is they're getting 43% more. We had this past year something like 70,000 teachers apply for 5,000 jobs, so I think it's recognized around the country that the city school system is going in the right direction. We're really making progress. Test scores are up, and kids who are getting out of college and want to teach in the best school system in the world think that New York City is the place to come. So, you know, all of those things are going together, and any monies that the state can help us with, we'd be very happy to do it. But we're certainly doing our share.
Mr. Mayor, how do you view the new Democratic Congress? Is it going to be any different than the Republican-controlled Congress as pertains to New York City?
Well, I think whether the Congress is any different, that remains to be seen. The Democrats said when they came in they would end all of this partisanship that had produced gridlock in Washington. And now they've got to produce, that's what they promised, and assume the public will hold their feet to the fire for that. In terms of New York City, we are a beneficiary. It's for one person, Charlie Rangel. Charlie Rangel will now be very powerful in the House, and when it comes to allocating monies, and Charlie really does understand the needs of New York City. The city has worked phenomenally well with him. I can tell you for the last 5 years, probably a week, not a week that goes by or 2 weeks that go by without Charlie and I having a conversation. So he knows the needs, and now he's in position to deliver, and we should do better with that. But Congress has to pull together and really look at the long-term problems that this country has and stand up and come up with serious long-term solutions that unfortunately will be painful, but if we don't do it now, our children won't have a...
Are you talking about Social Security? What are you talking about?
Well, who's going to pay for retirement? Social Security is one of them. Who's going to pay for medical care that no municipality or company can afford anymore? How are we going to solve the problem of our dependency on foreign oil? What do we do about the war in Iraq is obviously on everybody's agenda. There's global warming. I don't know that just because we're having a warm winter that necessarily says global warming, but all of the real science says global warming is taking place, and it is a very worrisome thing for us because some of these things may be irreversible or reversible only with international cooperation over decades, and governments don't seem to be able to do that. And I think the public wants this government in Washington and in Albany and in the city. They want these governments to work, and they don't want what party you're a member of to be the deciding thing as to who gets a job. They don't want, if it's your idea, we're not going to do it, or they don't want you to hide what's going on. They want to know it's their government. And you know, every group comes in and promises reform, and then they've got to deliver. I promise reform, and the public's got to hold me responsible. Elliot Spitzer promised reform. The public will hold him responsible. I think he will do it, incidentally. I think he'll be a very good governor. But the legislature is the other thing, and it's a little harder to hold any one person responsible, but you have to start holding your own locally elected legislator responsible for what the whole group does, because if you don't, nobody's responsible, and then we have the gridlock that we've had and the mistakes that we've been making continue.
All right, Mr. Mayor, let me take a break. I've got a whole bunch of folks that would like to ask you a question. We will get to our phones, 1-800-848-WABC, when we come back. WABC. We continue here on a Friday with Mayor Michael Bloomberg, scheduling putting him on the phone this morning. Speaking of the phone, you are there as well. Mr. Mayor, we've got a whole bank of phones here. Why don't we start with Mickey in Manhattan. Mickey, what's your question for Mayor Michael Bloomberg?
Yeah, Happy New Year, Mayor.
Happy New Year.
You know, your trans fat campaign starting in the health department there has been very successful. So successful, in fact, that all over the nation, fast foods are taking the partially hydrogenated oils out. Now, my question is this. If you can do that for trans fats, I want to know, in regards to global warming, how long is it going to be before the oceans, rivers, and lakes of our world boil over?
Well, I don't know that they're going to boil over, but what's happening is that we are overfishing our oceans. We are clearly polluting an awful lot of rivers. We're polluting an awful lot of air. We are generating carbon dioxide, and that will change the climate. Those things are easily measurable, and I don't think there's any reputable scientist that would disagree with, number one, the facts of that, and number two, the effect on the overall environment. It's not clear how long it takes. The developing world is a very big problem because they are so bent on providing the jobs and the standard of living for their people that they just haven't been able to focus on the environment, and now they're starting to pay the price, and I hope realizing the damage they're doing. We in the more developed world do exactly the same thing. We are unwilling to curb greenhouse gases, and it would cost some money, but if we don't do this down the road, our kids aren't going to have a future. Yeah, there was a great story in the Wall Street Journal the other day about smoking in China. China loses 1 million people a year now to smoking. 1 million people a year die prematurely because of smoking. In China, one of the big problems, they open a new coal-fired power plant every single week. And all of the stuff goes into the air, and it pollutes.
It's awful. You've been to the Far East. It's just terrible.
Well, the last time I was in Hong Kong, you could see the waves of pollution during the week when the factories in mainland China were open, coming over the hills. And I'm told that it's not gotten any better. But, you know, what we have to do is we've got to convince countries like China and India and Russia to get control, but we've got to do it ourselves. It's not just pointing fingers. We're all in this together. And I am happy to say that the city is trying to do its part. We've just about completed a survey of all of the pollutants that the city puts in the air, and we're trying to do something about that. The buses and garbage trucks and other things that we buy, equipment that generates pollution, we're really going ahead and getting non-polluting or less polluting stuff. We still have to have an economy, but we can do a lot better, and we're starting a survey of all of the greenhouse gases that are produced by the city. Actually, the city, because of its concentration per capita, is very efficient. But nevertheless, it's a big city, and we certainly do our share of damage to the environment, and we've got to recognize that and focus on trying to do something about it. But throughout this country and throughout this world, I don't think we're taking the seriousness of this, of the damage that we're doing, to heart. There are always, you know, a handful of people that write these stories, oh, we're not sure that it matters. And some guy wrote an op-ed piece I saw in a magazine and said, well, what's the difference of this global warming? The ski operators will suffer, but the golf course operators will benefit. Somebody always benefits when somebody loses. Unfortunately, that's probably about as dumb a thing as I've ever read, and sadly, some people believe it. It's just not clear that what will happen if the oceans rise, the ice caps melt. It may very well be the future of humanity.
Let's get to Glenn here real fast, Mr. Mayor. Glenn, go ahead. You've only got a couple of seconds, so get right to it.
Mr. Mayor, first I want to say I think you're overall doing a great job. My question is, I was a fireman at Ground Zero, and, you know, just had many friends who worked in the
What's the question,
tower.
Glenn? I'm almost out of it. We're going to close this out.
Why are you separating the names of the firemen from the regular victims?
Mr. Mayor, 30 seconds.
It's not just the firemen. It's firemen, Port Authority, and city police and court officers who rushed into the building. I think the answer is that there's a fundamental difference. These people ran in to save other lives, and the others were tragically caught in the situation. And I think you have to recognize the first responders and their heroism. I'm sure there's heroism in the buildings, but there's a fundamental difference, and I think we want to tell our kids that the people stood up, and we want our kids to say, I want to be like them and join the services and save if there is a need to be willing to do it the next time.
Mr. Mayor, always a pleasure. I'll look forward to next Friday. Take care of yourself, all right?
John, you too.
All right. Mayor Michael Bloomberg here this morning at 77 WABC. Straight ahead this Friday morning, my friend Chris Wallace, a normal regular, has got the day off. We have the Reverend Jesse Jackson stopping by, so you stay where you are at 77 WABC.